economic diplomacy, an on-ramp for student loan repayment, and a little bit of Christmas in July. It's all on the program today. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Baltimore, I'm Amy Scott, in for Kai Rizdahl. It's Monday, July 3rd. Good to have you with us. While a lot of us are busy prepping for Independence Day celebrations, in Washington, D.C., folks at the Treasury Department are getting ready for a big international trip. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen is off to Beijing later this week. She'll meet with senior officials in the Chinese government to discuss, according to Treasury, how the world's two largest economies can work together on global challenges and, quote, responsibly manage our relationship. That relationship, to put it mildly, has not been great. The secretary's visit comes as the State Department warns Americans to reconsider travel to China due to the risk of wrongful detention, and as China announces new trade restrictions related to chip manufacturing. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams reports from Washington on what's likely to be on Yellen's agenda.
There's a giant list of economic issues Secretary Yellen could address on this trip. Trade and tariffs, climate change, forced labor issues, the list goes on. Abigail Hornstein is an economics professor at Wesleyan University. She says there are two approaches the secretary could take.
One would be to focus on the top short-term economic issues from the U.S. perspective, which are inflation and unemployment.
To tackle those, talks could focus on supply chain issues and making sure goods and services flow easily between the two countries. Or Yellen could take a more long-term perspective.
Focus more on the structure of economic ties between the countries, looking at export and import patterns and foreign direct investment.
Hornstein expects a blend of both strategies, with an emphasis on issues facing American companies that operate in China. Rosalind Shea co-directs the political economy program at Temple University.
Some of those important issues include market access for U.S. companies.
Both in China and in countries where China has a lot of influence. Plus, there are trade issues.
U.S. tariffs on Chinese imports, many of them from the different rounds of tariffs during the U.S.-China trade war, actually remain in effect.
But the larger goal of this trip, says Weifeng Zhang at the Mercatus Center, is just to ease tensions a bit.
There are a lot of legitimate security concerns when it comes to our economic relationship with China. But maintaining the channels of communications and official engagement is important.
He says just sitting down and talking will be a win on this trip. At the same time,
I don't think the talks in itself could put the two countries back to the right track.
But he says a first step is better than nothing. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
Wall Street started the 4th of July party early. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Sticking with China, the electrification of the global auto industry continues to accelerate. Yesterday, Chinese automotive giant BYD reported record sales of 700,000 electric and plug-in hybrid cars this past quarter. And today, Tesla posted its own quarterly record of more than 400,000 deliveries worldwide, partly boosted by discounts the company has had to offer to compete in the Chinese market. So where does this leave legacy automakers like GM and Ford, which used to be pretty popular in China? Marketplace's Matt Levin looked into it.
Taylor Ogan has lived in Shenzhen, China for about 6 months now. He's the CEO of Snowball Capital, a hedge fund that invests in EV automakers. When he hopped in a Chinese rideshare the other day, he thought something was wrong with it.
I was like, what is this horrible noise? And I didn't really realize that I hadn't been in an internal combustion engine vehicle for 6 months until I heard the engine.
Ogun says Chinese rideshare fleets are mostly all EVs. About 1 in 3 new cars sold in China is electric. But instead of a Ford F-150 Lightning or Chevy Volt on Chinese roads, you'll see way more BYD Songs.
The average Chinese EV driver 3 to 4 years ago would never have considered ever in their lifetime driving a Chinese-made car. And yet they are.
Chinese drivers used to be reliable customers for Detroit automakers. Tu Li is managing director at Sino Auto Insights.
Now their share and their sales has eroded significantly.
That's mostly because Chinese companies have produced much cheaper EV sedans. The BYD Seagull is about $10,000, although one expensive American brand is doing pretty well.
Tesla is still crushing it in China.
Chinese consumers are also choosing cutting-edge tech over legacy car makers. And Seth Weintraub at the EV website Electrek says it's a matter of time before the GMs and Fords of the world have a Chinese competitor to worry about at home.
We can see it coming. Like, they're making very compelling vehicles, high-quality vehicles.
Weintraub says even with a 27% tariff, Chinese EVs could be a cheaper alternative to American models. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
As fireworks and barbecues continue through the official 4th of July holiday tomorrow, thousands of immigrants to this country will become citizens, many in special Independence Day-themed ceremonies. U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services says more than 5,500 people will take the oath of citizenship between June 30th and July 7th this year. That's just a slice of the roughly 9 million people who are eligible to become U.S. citizens, meaning they're over 18 and have been in the country for long enough to qualify. But taking that final step comes with a price tag that can be hard for some to pay. Marketplace's Elizabeth Troval has this story from Houston.
Sitting at her kitchen table in Baytown, Texas, near Houston, Jessica Mejia pulls out her smartphone and plays me a YouTube video.
Who wrote the Declaration of Independence?
Mejia is preparing to take the citizenship test.
Thomas Jefferson.
Like many others, Mejia's long path to becoming a citizen started with tragedy. Her brother was murdered in Colombia, which has a history of armed conflict. She and her mom fled 11 years ago. Once in the U.S., she married and got a green card through her husband. She and her mom are in the naturalization process, which includes filling out a 20-page form called the N-400, which is not cheap.
It's a $725 fee for just one individual, and that's just for the cost of the application.
Brenda Loya is COO of Blue Hub Capital, a nonprofit that helps people finance citizenship application fees at 1% interest. She says many people are dissuaded by that $725 fee, which, by the way, has nearly tripled over the past 20 years and is going up again soon.
Families make choices on where they spend their money. And if times are tight, it's possible that, you know, they won't take the step. And so by providing this loan, families don't have to make that choice.
Mejia and her mom are borrowing from Blue Hub for their applications, which they'll pay back at around $50 a month each, the cost of, say, going out to eat. Mejia says you don't even feel it. Blue Hub's program has financed roughly 600 loans so far. It's among a patchwork of nonprofits that rely on private donations and federal, state, and local funding. Some places, like New York City, have a robust network that's led to a high number of naturalizations.
The library systems, law schools, you know, legal service providers.
Ghislaine Williams is from the nonprofit Houston Endowment, which is aiming to beef up Houston's support system. It's starting a $1.5 million fund.
To be able to provide stipends to help cover the application fees.
But fees are just one socioeconomic barrier. University of Southern California research shows that those least likely to become citizens tend to be lower income, less educated, and less English speaking. Some may not be able to read or have attended middle or high school, says Mariana Sanchez, a Houston-based advocate.
They came to this country, they start just working, but they never study.
Her organization, Bonding Against Adversity, provides citizenship classes to immigrants of all educational backgrounds and helps low-income immigrants get federal fee waivers. Barring some exceptions, the citizenship test must be in English.
Even if they had 0% of English, we bring them with us. And we have a pre-K class, we have a bilingual one, bilingual two.
An immigrant herself from Ecuador, she loves to look at the faces around her at citizenship ceremonies.
Every time is a reminder that we did it. We succeed. We work hard and we made it.
As for Jessica Mejia, if all goes well with their interview and she passes her citizenship test, she'll take her oath of allegiance to the United States at a local ceremony and then celebrate.
Con un barbecue, algo bien gringo. Hot dogs.
With an all-American barbecue. And eventually, casting a vote in the next election. In Houston, I'm Elizabeth Trovall for Marketplace.
Coming up,
productivity went up in the people who received glasses.
I mean, of course it did. But first, let's do the numbers. The markets closed early today ahead of the 4th of July holiday. The Dow Jones Industrial Average gained 10 points, basically flat, to close at 34,418. The NASDAQ rose 28 points, 0.2%, to finish at 13,816. And the S&P 500 found 5 points, 0.1%, and at 44.55. We heard from Matt Levin about why some U.S. electric vehicle makers are losing ground in China. Domestic EV stocks were promising today, though. Rivian Automotive, which beat second quarter estimates for deliveries, shot ahead 17.4%. Tesla, which posted record sales for the quarter, sped up 6.9%. Folks hosting July 4th cookouts tomorrow will pay an average of $67.73 to feed 10 people. That's according to the American Farm Bureau Federation. Since 2013, it's tracked the price of cookout staples, including burgers, hot dogs, chicken breasts, pork chops, potato salad, chips, strawberries, and ice cream. Gotta have ice cream. The overall grocery cost is about 3% lower than last year, but 14% higher than 2 years ago. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Amy Scott. The Biden administration says it's exploring other ways to forgive some federal student loans. That's after the Supreme Court struck down a plan to cancel up to $20,000 per borrower. In the meantime, student loan payments, which had been paused during the pandemic, will come due again this fall, and interest will start accruing on federal loans for the first time in 3.5 years. To make that transition a little easier, the Department of Education has announced that borrowers who fall behind in the first year won't face penalties. Marketplace's Samantha Fields has details.
More than 43 million people have federal student loans, and most haven't had to pay them since the spring of 2020.
We've taken all these people that were in the habit of making their payment out of the habit.
Betsy Mayotte at the nonprofit Institute of Student Loan Advisors says that's one reason she's been concerned that the number of people who go into delinquency or default might spike when payments restart.
And then to add sort of insult to injury, things are a lot more expensive today than they were in March of 2020.
Plus, she says, millions of people's loans have changed servicers in the last few years.
So there may be people that may not even be aware of where their loans are. So that might cause some delinquencies as well.
That's why Abby Shafroth at the National Consumer Law Center says it's significant that the Department of Education has this plan to try to smooth the transition.
Interest will be charged to borrowers' accounts and bills will be sent out. But if borrowers miss their payments or there's confusion, they pay the wrong amount, Their credit reporting won't be impacted. They won't be put into delinquent or default status, and they won't face late fees or collection costs or anything like that as a result.
In addition, she says, the Biden administration has made a bunch of other changes aimed at making it easier for people to keep up. Those include a new income-based repayment plan that will reduce borrowers' monthly payments and eliminate unpaid interest, so people's loans don't just keep growing even when they're actively paying them back. Fenneba Otto at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, says that's a big deal, especially for low-income borrowers.
It does sound like many of the people who have been working on this issue within the Biden administration have been listening to where the issues have arisen in the repayment process with regards to tripping people up in their ability to pay down those debts.
Another change that just went into effect, anyone who took out $12,000 or less in student loans will now have their balance forgiven after 10 years instead of 20. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
It may feel like summer is just getting going, but some retailers are already looking ahead to a different holiday season, about 5 months away. To see how the prep is going, we checked in with one of our retail regulars, who right now is dividing her time between pool toys and Christmas wrapping paper.
This is Irene Kesselman of Alley Cat Toys in Carrboro, North Carolina. Our business this summer has been very steady. We are selling everything from pool toys and beach toys to Pokemon to puzzles. I think slime has started to make a comeback, believe it or not, as much as parents may or may not want to hear. But the middle of the summer for our store, at least, and I believe other toy stores, is the time of transition. We're selling the beach toys, but we're also getting ready for back to school. We've started to receive backpacks and lunch boxes, and we've even actually started to sell them. Our prices from COVID, we're looking at a lot of things that are either steady or have risen a little bit. We have seen more and more notices come through pertaining to shipping costs. Vendors are going back to offering free shipping at a certain level that is more attainable than it was during times of COVID. Within a month, we will be buying holiday wrapping paper and picking out the colors of the ribbons that will coincide with the paper. And yes, we buy it this early because we have to start making bows. Our staff works starting in, actually next month, making garbage bags full of bows. So we're not caught in the middle of the busy season stopping to have to do that task. My manager, Ariel, and myself are getting ready to go to one of the biggest toy and gift shows in Atlanta in 2 weeks. We will be spending 3 full packed days of writing orders. We go to reps, showrooms, and we can expect to stay anywhere from a half an hour to 3-4 hours with one person. And pencil in hand, we go around the showroom and we write orders from this point on, and we spread them out until December. And in some cases, we're even starting to buy for Easter of next year and Valentine's Day, because that is how it goes in the life of a toy store buyer.
That buyer was Irene Kesselman, owner of Alley Cat Toys in Carrboro, North Carolina. If you've got a small business of your own, we'd love to hear how your summer is going. You can share your story at marketplace.org/myeconomy. I read a quote once from the talk show host Jerry Springer that stuck with me. One of the toughest things in life, he said, is keeping your glasses clean. That is, I guess, if you can afford them at all. In India and Bangladesh, many people struggle to pay for glasses, and many face a stigma about wearing them, one that has an economic cost of its own. The BBC's Sam Fenwick reports.
You gather up your stuff ready for work, keys, wallet, glasses, and you think no more of it. But that's not the case for millions of people around the world who struggle with poor eyesight. People like Ankit Sharma. He's a truck driver in India's capital, Delhi.
I drive for 15 hours every day. My eyesight has been weak for the past 2 years.
He was worried, though, about the impact wearing glasses could have on his job.
I felt people would tease me. And who would employ you if you can't see anything?
Eventually, Ankit's eyesight got so bad he was persuaded by the global social enterprise Vision Spring to get his eyes tested. And now he wears glasses.
They are a lifesaver. I can see objects near and far away clearly now. I've got my eyes again.
Ankit's experience is not unusual. Vision Spring is one of many organisations working to change negative attitudes towards wearing glasses in India. Its CEO, Ella Goodwin, says they're widely seen as something doctors just give to sick people.
We have to awaken the demand for people who don't know that eyeglasses can solve their blurry vision problem or believe that somehow glasses aren't for them.
Affordability is another issue. So Vision Spring helps people who earn less than $4 a day be able to afford a pair of glasses. But even when people can afford it, they can't always find it. So another challenge is
creating many, many more points of sale and distribution that are closer to where consumers live and work.
Ella Goodwin's team has helped some 10 million people globally over the past two decades. It's trained thousands of local health workers around the world to carry out eye tests. That improves the lives of people with poor vision. And it also benefits the health workers, people like Shefali Carton.
I can save money now. My son got a master's degree, elder daughter got a bachelor's degree, and I am able to pay for the intermediate schooling of another daughter.
Businesses are also starting to see the benefits of having staff with better eyesight. The Tashuka Garment Factory in Dakar makes jeans for companies like Zara and H&M. It recently introduced free eye tests and glasses for thousands of its employees. Roika Begum works as a machine operator there.
I can now put yarn into the needle faster and can finish work quickly.
So far, 12,000 out of nearly 17,000 Tashuka workers have been screened and factory output has increased. The same results are being shown across lots of industries. Nathan Congdon is a public health expert at Queen's University in Northern Ireland. He studied tea pickers in Assam in India before and after they'd been given corrective eyeglasses.
Productivity went up in the people who received glasses by about 22%. That was the biggest increase in productivity that had ever been found from a medical intervention.
The Tashuka Group chairman, Arshad Jamal, says the company's motivation in improving employees' eyesight isn't just about boosting its profits. It also wants to show staff
that we are more human and we are with them for their well-being.
The CEO of Vision Spring, Ella Goodwin, has this message for companies.
Lots of people are chasing very sophisticated ways to increase productivity. And what we'd really like the world to know is please also invest in your workers' vision. It's so simple. The benefits are immediate.
If companies listen, it really could make a big difference to the estimated 1 billion people around the world who still need glasses. I'm the BBC's Sam Fenwick for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, some help is coming for the housing market. The Commerce Department said today construction spending rose in May by almost 1% from the month before. That's more than forecasters expected and reflects an increase in residential building. We checked in with Rob Dietz, chief economist of the National Association of Home Builders. He says the shortage of existing homes for sale is boosting demand for new homes.
The fundamental challenge in the housing market is a lack of inventory. And while some demand has been priced out of the market, there's still a lot of people looking to buy a home.
There's some good news on the rental side, too.
Right now, there are 1 million apartments under construction. That's the highest number since the fall of 1973.
As more of those units get built in the next 4 to 8 months, Dietz says housing inflation should fall. As of last month's Consumer Price Index report, shelter was the biggest contributor to inflation. All right, we got to go. But first, here's your moment of economic context, a callback to those record Tesla sales we talked about earlier. Halfway into 2023, Bloomberg is out with its latest billionaires index. And yes, Elon Musk topped the list. The CEO of Tesla and SpaceX and owner of Twitter is worth $234 billion at last count, having added almost $97 billion to his fortune in just the last 6 months. Average earnings of the world's 500 richest people so far this year, $14 million per day each. Our daily production team includes Livy Burdett, Andy Corbin, Richard Cunningham, Maria Hollenhorst, Sarah Leeson, Sean McHenry, and Sophia Terenzio. I'm Amy Scott. We'll be back tomorrow. This is APM.